Now, the popular wisdom is that good marriages come from chemistry, that some people have it and some people don't. Those that do are lucky. Aren't you lucky that this relationship, worked so well for you? But the truth of the matter is, it's not so much chemistry, it is commitment. It is a decision. It is some things that you do to make it a good marriage.
This is Focus on the Family, and that was our host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. Today we'll have more words of encouragement for everyone who is married or would like to be married. I'm Mike Trout, and welcome to this edition of the broadcast. We're going to bring you a question and answer session that occurred after our interview with Dr. Neil Clark Warren, who had just written a new book called The Triumphant Marriage. Those comments that we just featured were taken from the first discussion we had with Dr. Warren. This often happens where we conduct an interview and then questions are asked from the gallery, and we decide not to air all 3 days in a row, but to come back to the content, and that's what we're doing today. And to get you into the flow of the conversation, I want to play just a little bit of the original discussion so that you have that background for the interview and then move on to the question and answer time. Just a little background on Dr. Warren. He's a clinical psychologist in private practice. He's authored a number of books, including Make Anger Your Ally and Finding the Love of Your Life. He's been married to Marilyn for 36 years, and together they have 3 grown children. And Dr. Warren is a very popular guest here on Focus on the Family. This new book of his is based on interviews with 100 couples who have successful marriages. And out of those interviews, Dr. Warren found 10 success secrets that all of these couples had in common. And he goes through those secrets in the book, and we talked about them here on the air. You'll hear some of the questions that relate to several of those 10 success secrets. Dr. Warren says that any marriage, no matter what state it's in now, can improve by at least 10% a year, every year. And in his book, he explains how to do that. Let's begin with this brief recap, pulling material from the 2 original interviews, and then move directly into the Q&A time. Here's Dr. Dobson.
Imagine a couple that's dating, and they're beginning to fall in love, and they sit hour upon hour talking about the future together. And we can have a little house, a little rose-covered cottage someplace, and we'll go through school, and then we'll start a profession, and then we'll have some children and raise them together, and they're dreaming together. You indicated in the book that one of the problems with marriages that start to die is that they bore each other to death because they quit dreaming.
Yes.
They quit talking about that. You know, that was when they were young. Now, they're in their own worlds, and it's no longer a shared experience.
I wish that every couple in America could get a plan for using their anniversary date for at least a 1 hour renewing the dream kind of process. 1 hour to renew our dream. Because like you say, you know, if you get the house, then that dream's taken care of.
Yeah.
Now you
next?
Got the kids, dream, and you're back to school, so that dream, then you finish, that dream's taken care of. So we need to keep a current dream all the time, because when you have that dream that you're aiming for, the two of you have so much more in common, so much more to talk about. And I've never known of two people who dream together about things that affect them both who don't have romantic feelings toward each other. It just produces romantic feelings to dream together.
Yeah, right.
Everybody has a lot of obstacles that they have to get over in order to get their marriage good. I mean, I have never known anybody who said it was just automatic for us. Natural as could be. The people who have the great marriages tell me that they had to work at it. And they had to learn how to be good at it. And in that work and that learning, they had to get over some hurdles. Hmm. One of the persons in our sample who lives in New York told us about a little technique that they use that I found very helpful. She said that every night when they come home, they turn the TV off and they take 1 half hour just to talk to each other about what's going on in your life. She said, we don't always find out anything dramatic, but she says, here's what we keep up with. They keep very closely attuned to what the other person is thinking, what the other person is reading, what the other person's concerned about, what the other person is conflicted about. And she said, we feel like we're very involved with each other, just partially on the basis of a half an hour a day of straight on from the inside of me to the inside of you kind of program.
That's why I like Marriage Encounter, because it teaches those kind of communicative skills, actually teaching people how to write those notes to one another. You can sometimes say something in writing that you can't say face to face. That's just one approach to it. But however you do it, you need to stay in touch with one another, because marriage is like a little green plant. You don't water it, it'll wither if you don't take the time for one another in that kind of communicative understanding. You can lose it.
That's right.
All right, anybody like to come ask a question? Oh, we got some takers here. Give us your name and where you're from.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Kim Whiteside. I'm from Sachse, Texas, which is outside of Dallas.
Sachse.
Sachse.
Let's say that very carefully, okay?
I usually have to spell it for people.
I'll bet you do.
I'm very disturbed, and I know you are too, that Christians are divorcing at about the same rate as non-Christians, probably because we have driver's ed and things like that, but we have very little for marriage, which is one of the most important things we ever do. Would your book adapt well in a local church, in a Sunday school class, and be valuable? Would it be good for a class, married Sunday school class?
Right off, I want to say yes. In fact, we just finished, I was telling Dr. Dobson, we just finished doing the videotapes of the whole seminar on the triumphant marriage, hoping that we can get these in as many churches in America as possible. We want to make it possible for churches to have these, because we believe that, look, if we have the principles and if we know how to help people work their way through the principles so that they can get really good as marital partners, then we need to get it out into the churches. And I believe that this material is exactly fitted for that kind of a situation.
It is a disgrace, isn't it, that Christian families disintegrate at just about the same rate as non-Christian families. How do you explain that?
Well, I believe that the last time I was on the program it helps to explain it, and that is that we have not done a good job in the church until now of helping people learn how to select one another to be in good marriages. And the selection of a person, I just think there's no question, Jim, that the selection of a person to marry is more important than everything else that you do after you get married combined. It's just so critical. Secondly, these things you need to learn in order to be really good at marriage, we haven't made that available enough to people, but now we can.
And what better way to do it than through the Sunday school, where there's an understanding of our meaning and purpose through Christ?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Next question.
Hi, good morning. I'm Robin Haynes. I'm from Colorado Springs here. And my question is, it's been said that the youngest of two families never work when they get married. And I was wondering, do you have any advice for two strong-willed babies of their families?
Now, that's a great one. Kevin Lehman would love that question, right?
He sure would.
Well, first of all, one of the things that we haven't talked about yet is a very important chapter on emotional health. What we know is that two people need to be emotionally healthy in order to make a marriage work. Now, you see, I take the position more passionately now than I ever have that until you get yourself into a right relationship with God, you can't get yourself into a right relationship with yourself. And until you get yourself into a right relationship with yourself, you can't get yourself into a right relationship with your marriage partner. So the first thing I would say is that sometimes I think in families, we don't help the youngest child do enough of the work necessary to get themselves really loved. We just love these little tykes so much ourselves, but we don't relate them to the Lord effectively enough or help them get related. So I would want to make sure that you've done that vertical kind of thing in between you and the Lord. The second thing is that, look, you know what I know, and that is that marriage is give and take. It's more give than it is take. And sometimes our youngest children, we get them into a position of thinking that an awful lot of life is take. And if an awful lot of life is take, that doesn't make you a very good marital partner. So there needs to be some real good teaching with two people like that, I think. But that's a very thoughtful question, I believe.
In a society like this where everything is disintegrating, where families are falling apart, you've got so many wounded kids who have come through the conflict, come through the divorce proceedings, the custody hearings, and all that that means, and bring that baggage with them into young adulthood and never deal with it, and then coast right on into marriage and just translate that right straight into their relationships.
Absolutely.
With their spouses.
You got 70% of all the people in our society have experienced a broken home, either the home of their parents or their own home. 70%.
So it perpetuates itself.
It
generation
does,
after generation.
Because if you grew up in a broken situation, and you know that 50% of all the children in the United States who are part of who come from broken homes have not seen their fathers for the previous 12 months. So you've got these fatherless children having come from this emotionally broken situation, and now they're going out to start a whole new marriage. Well, they need to get emotionally healthy first, and we have some ideas in there about how they do it, but fundamentally it's important to say you get right with the Lord.
Yeah.
And you get that grace permeating your life.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Neil. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that is so important. That's the foundation. Everything is built on that.
Everything is built on that. And you see, how in the world can two people love each other well if they haven't ever been loved well themselves? There is a straight-on correlation between how effectively you love and how effectively you have been loved. So if you come out of, especially if you come out of brokenness, you've got to get yourself taken care of, remediated, it, maybe we could say.
You know, I have suggested in the past, and I think I ought to repeat it here, I know you would agree with this, Neil, that when parents of grown children who are about to get married are considering what to give them, one of the most precious gifts they can hand to them might be premarital counseling, and then whatever surfaces there, the counseling necessary to work through that before the marriage actually is consummated, so that they don't just drag this baggage into the relationship.
Boy, that's a profound point. If we could get premarital counseling and some really good materials available to every young couple in America that's about to get married, I think we could reduce the divorce rate significantly just on the basis of that.
A lot of them wouldn't get married when they get through with the psychological testing.
There is no question that an awful lot of people today get married who should never get married in the beginning. We know that from the very start, and sometimes they even know it from the start. So we got to stop that, because it's too much of a wound to the kingdom of God. It's too much of a wound to the society that we live in.
Okay, next question.
My name is Kathleen Koning. I'm from Danville, California. My question regards a couple very dear to us whose marriage has taken a major hit and all but died. Now, the head says, stay married, but the heart hasn't followed. And they're discouraged because of the time element involved. It has been a long time. What would your words of encouragement be to this couple? What would you say to them at this point?
The rebuilding process for a marriage needs to be recognized for how difficult it is. It would not be helpful for us to say that we have an answer that could just, you know, take care of everything quickly. But I think we have to go back to what the covenant was that the two people engaged in the beginning. See, I believe that covenant needs to guide what we're trying to do in a situation like that. These people made a covenant with God and in the presence of their friend that they would love, honor, and cherish each other for a lifetime. They would perform unto each other all the duties that a wife or husband owes to her partner, that they would have no other substitute mates, and they do this under every kind of circumstance. So now I don't want to beat them on the head with that, but I want to remind them that they took that covenant. Then we need to help these people dig new trenches and build new foundations to keep the covenant they kept before. Along the way, they may be too toxic for each other. We may need to divide them, separate them for a period of time. But I never give up hope in any of these situations. I've had several people who got a divorce. They ended up getting married again. And I just don't want to let them go from that if we can possibly save it. So I'd move right back in there in a specific way. I'd give them good materials. I would help them get into touch with persons they could afford, who could really be helpful to them. And I'd make sure they were Christian persons, because that's where the hope comes from. The fact that the gospel is available to them in such a powerful way. You know what I know. Divorce almost never solves big problems.
It just compounds it.
That's right.
Yeah. Next question.
Hello, gentlemen. My name is Jim Cornwall. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And my wife, Kathy, is right behind me. We both have a question for you. Mine deals with conflict resolution. Kathy's a confronter. I'm an avoider. And if we had a forest fire, she'd be out there stomping out for a spark, and it would be singeing my nose hairs before I'd deal with it. But I think what's happened over the years, and we have 8 years of marriage behind us, and I think that we've come to terms with some of these because we're in a blended family, so it brought a lot of conflict naturally to the marriage. But it seems to me that where we get stuck is that avoidance on my end seems to leave her feeling as though I'm not on her side a lot. And I'm looking for a way to let her know that even though I may not be right in there from the beginning, I'm still on her side. I'm still wanting to resolve that conflict, and I still want the marriage to be good and get better.
Well, I'm sure you've taken a big step forward in that right here by asking that question. But here's what I would say to you. If you knew for sure that becoming an expert conflict resolver would make a big difference in how good your marriage became, and if I could say to you, look, if you will just read some materials that I have, which will help you become a quicker, a more on top of it conflict resolve, I'm pretty sure you'd read them, and you would work hard to become good at that. If you knew that there was a direct line relationship between getting good at that and getting a great marriage. So what I would say to you today is you can do it. There's no excuse now for you not to become really good at resolving conflict with your wife. And if you do get good at that, your marriage will, without any question, get better and better and better over time.
Thanks.
Okay, let's hear from your wife.
You could probably change your title of your book as to you can still have a triumphant marriage even if your husband is not Jim Cornwall. Because he is the sweetest man in the world. But my name is Kathleen Cornwall, also from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. As my husband mentioned, we are a blended family. I was widowed and he was divorced. So we have four teenagers that are all listening to you. And I want to know what principles that we can teach them now so that they can have a tremendous, triumphant, good marriage in spite of all the statistics that they deal with.
Well, in the book that we have called Finding the Love of Your Life, we have 10 principles for finding the right marriage, choosing the right marriage partner. And in that book, what we try to say right up front is get yourself healthy before you get yourself married. So the first one is getting healthy, and I tried to flesh that out today. I think until you get yourself into a right relationship with God, the way the Apostle Paul is talking about that in Romans, you can't really get yourself very healthy, not in this kind of a difficult world. That's the first one. The second one that I would say to people is, look, there are lots of persons in the world you can marry. Make sure you select somebody who's a lot like you. Find somebody to love who's a lot like you. The third one that I would say to people is, be very, very careful of passion in chemistry. You got to have it to make a relationship work. But I take a strong premarital abstinence stand. It's just not a good thing to get involved in sexually before marriage. But it's a very difficult thing to save yourself. But you can do it. There are millions of people now around this country who are taking that kind of a stand. And ultimately, if I really wanted to, if they're boys, these teenagers you're talking about, I'd say get good at identifying your feelings and learn how to put them into words, because there's nothing a woman wants more than to be in a soul relationship with her man. Last question.
I'm Dr. Joe Morrow from Amarillo, Texas. And when I deal with patients with marital problems, I see a lot of situations where issues between child and parent were not dealt with prior to going into the marriage. And a lot of times they'll cause divorce and be a major obstacle or wall between a relationship that the person that, in particular, that has a problem, say, between themselves and their father or themselves and their mother, they can't see that as a problem. And what it does is it affects the marriage that's right here, right now, trying to grow and grow forward. How do you suggest repair of this lack of tools from their childhood or these obstacles between their parents and the current person trying to work on a marriage?
That's a very, very thoughtful question, and there's no question about the fact that if you enter into a new relationship, a marriage, before you have worked through these primary relationships of your life with your dad, with your mom, you're liable to transfer to this new person all kinds of feelings and response patterns that aren't going to be very helpful to the marriage. All I can say to that, Joe, is that I suggest to people all the time, get yourself into a counseling relationship. Many churches around this country now have counseling available at a very reasonable rate. There are more and more Christian therapists and counselors, and there are more in this country now by far than there have ever been before. And I say to people, look, if you don't have a good relationship with your mom, you may have a tough time having a good relationship with your wife. Go and get that relationship taken care of. Get that repaired. And could I just say another word on that?
Sure.
On our chapter on sexuality, negotiate a mutually satisfying sexual relationship, we know that a fair number of persons have been victims of sexual abuse in this country. And in that chapter, and I know you've talked about this probably dozens of times on your program, but I just want to say it again. I say to people, look, if you get yourself into a sexual relationship that's problematic and you discover that one of you is the victim of sexual abuse, it's fewer people maybe on the basis of that new survey, Sex in America, mm-hmm. than we thought, go and get that taken care of, because that's an emotional problem that's going to confuse and it's going to impede the development of your sexual relationship.
And you can get beyond it.
No question. There is not a problem I know of today, emotional problem, not biochemical, but emotional problem that you cannot get beyond if you'll work on it. That's the hope.
And that is hope, and that's the bottom line. Neil, thanks for letting us interact with you and with the gallery again on this additional occasion. The title of the book we've been talking about is The Triumphant Marriage, which outlines the components of successful marriages based on a study of those who have had successful marriages, and I think it's going to be helpful to many, many people out there. Appreciate your friendship, Neil. You know, I am hearing you talk more about the Lord and about the relationship with Him in getting along with other people than I've ever heard you say before.
It took the Lord a long time, I think, to convince me of some things. And I'm so passionate about them now. Everywhere I go in America, I say, look, the revolution that has to come in the area of mate selection and marriage, it has to start with a renewed understanding of how crucial it is for you to get your salvation taken care of. That's the first issue.
The closer you draw to Him, the harder it is to fight with anybody.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Remember the old song, Makes You Love Everybody?
Makes you love everybody.
Makes you love your husband or wife, too, doesn't it?
And Jim, you know something? I just published an article recently on the idolatry of marriage. Let me tell you very quickly what I mean by that. I think that in this country, for a lot of people, they have thought that marriage could substitute for God. And they've literally gotten married thinking that all those deep-seated fears, conflicts, needs, and all that could be taken care of if they got the right marriage partner. No marriage can do that for you. You've got to get yourself right with God before you can get into a right marriage.
Bless you, Neil. Thanks for being with us. We'll schedule another opportunity for you to be here as soon as you're available.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, Jim.
Well, we all thoroughly enjoyed it. That was Dr. Neil Clark Warren. He was our guest some time ago, and we continued to take questions from the gallery, the folks that were here visiting, and that's what we featured primarily on today's broadcast, the responses to those questions. By the way, if you're ever in the U.S. in Colorado Springs, we'd love to have you come by and visit us and maybe even be a part of one of our audiences. This program is provided by Focus on the Family. Our producer was Lisa Cadman. Engineering was handled by Pete Stokey. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, looking forward to having you back when we'll once more turn our hearts toward home. Thank you.